from New York City,
the Comedy Cellar and Rethink Production present
Live from America Podcast.
We will make America great again.
How about new, you crazy Dutch bastard?
Live from America Podcast.
I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up, live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal.
No. Excuse me, just so you understand.
We can't be the stupid country anymore.
Live from America Podcast.
I believe we can keep the promise of our founding. The idea that if you're willing to work hard, it doesn't matter who you are, or where you come from, or what you look like, or where you love. It doesn't matter whether you're black or white, or Hispanic or Asian, or Native American, or young or old, or rich or poor, able, disabled, gay or straight. You can make it here in America if you're willing to try.
It's just words, folks. It's just words.
This is Live from America Podcast with Noam Dorman and Hatem Gabb.
Hatem, before we start and do the introductions, who was responsible for that opening? I've never said this. That's a really good opening.
I did it.
What do you mean you did it?
I took the parts.
Like, you actually found all those sound bites?
Yeah, all these sound bites.
And you edited them together?
No, I sent them to a company that edited it together.
But I chose
who says what when.
I guess I have to listen to it. Maybe it's not that good. I don't know. But
what?
It is outstanding.
Thank you.
It is really good.
And funny.
No, it's really, really good. And the music behind it, it's just really good. Okay, do the introductions. Go ahead.
Finally, I get a compliment. I'll tell Steven. So welcome to Live from America Podcast from the Comedy Cellar. Great lineup today, so we got to start right away. Mr. Oliver Darcy. Woo! From CNN, he's back.
Excited to be here.
My hero.
You are Noam's number one hero. And comedian Boris Haken. Hi, welcome back.
Thank you.
Dan Nederman by special request.
Popular demand.
Popular demand. And of course, from 538, Galen Druk. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, sir. How's it going? It's quite the sausage fest tonight.
I know.
Oh,
right?
Galen.
And of course, Noam Dorman is here. So I had something ready, but.
What's your type, Galen? What?
Sausage.
If you had to pick one of us, who would it be?
I'll tell you after the show.
All right. Over a drink. Go ahead.
Well, but in all right.
Go ahead.
To bear
now way. We're all gonna wonder the whole time.
Yeah, and we're all gonna try to impress you the whole show.
And we'll include Zach in that, by the way, because he might be my pick.
Yeah, Zach got buff. I gotta say, I almost didn't recognize him. I haven't been here for a couple months. Just got to throw credit to Zach's way.
There we go.
All right. So listen. So would you?
No. Yeah. Let's talk about Oliver.
Okay. So Oliver Darcy, can you fill us? So Alex Jones has gotten banned from Facebook for hate speech. And has been taken down from iTunes. And we have with us the man who was responsible for that. As I said, Oliver is to Alex Jones as Hannibal is to Bill Cosby. And it's actually quite a good analogy because everybody knew this about Cosby all the time. And Hannibal's like, why the fuck is this guy getting away with this when everybody knows about it? And that's kind of what Oliver said about Alex Jones. And sure enough, everybody's taking Alex Jones down. Okay, so now I think it's a mistake that they're taking him down. But anyway, Oliver, tell us a little bit about
why you did it.
Well, it's sort of confusing. And it started off, I don't think I expected this ever to go where it did, but I was at a event Facebook was having with some other executives, and they were talking about how they have all these fancy tools to track and limit misinformation on their platform. And after the presentation, I asked them a question. I was very simple and direct, and I said, hey, this is great, you guys have all these tools and you want to limit misinformation on your platform and all the stuff, but you guys allow Alex Jones and InfoWars to post all this nonsense on your feed.
And nonsense in your opinion. I'm going.
Well,
go,
okay. I think in most people's opinion, when they read it, they'll find it nonsense.
There's a lot of nonsense on Facebook. Let's just say there's a lot of other nonsense.
I'm being facetious.
And
go
so
ahead.
They struggle to answer the question. We wrote it up at CNN, and then...
And when he says we, he means he.
Yeah. I wrote it up at CNN, and it really prompted this firestorm of media criticism from all sorts of people who were saying, yeah, this makes a little sense to us. And for the next few weeks from their tech platforms, it kind of the storm grew and grew to encompass other tech platforms like YouTube and Apple and Spotify, et cetera, et cetera. And so they came under a lot of fire. And what you saw this past Sunday was Apple took the first initiative in just banning them entirely from iTunes. And then right after that, Facebook unpublished their pages, which they had been reluctant to do, and YouTube terminated their account, Spotify terminated their account, Pinterest, so on and so forth. And effectively now, the only portal into mainstream conversation is Twitter, where Jack Dorsey, the founder of Twitter, has defended allowing InfoWars to stay on for now.
Wait, they still have an app, though, in the App Store, right?
And they have the app in the App Store, which is
which
climbing.
Shot up. Yeah.
Well, okay, so, and by the way, it's interesting. You know, I think that everybody, this is a comment on the press in a way, but I think everybody assumes from your question to them of why don't you take Alex Jones off, that you want them to take Alex Jones off. But the truth is that's not a fair assumption. You could have, that's a perfectly valid question, even if you don't think they should.
The question was really not as much about InfoWars, but in regards to Facebook's standards. So Facebook comes out and they say, we have all these policies put into place to not only limit misinformation, but to limit hate speech on their platform. And Alex Jones is really the obvious example of someone who not only towed the line, but really just crossed and ran over it and was way out there flagrantly violating these policies that have in place. So the question was really
more... Which policies did he violate, would you say?
Facebook ultimately got him for, or said that they terminated his accounts for hate speech.
Yeah, so
there are certain...
So that's not a very clear standard.
Well, there are certain groups on Facebook that Facebook... Again, I don't make the policies for Facebook. I'm just saying, I was just asking the question.
Do you know what
about
their enforcement. How they define hate speech?
I believe Facebook would define hate speech as speech against protected groups. They would say...
It's against any group. Because I remember there was white... Like, what if you say white men specifically...
That's okay.
That's No. That's actually... There were people that got taken down
like
for that.
It's like race, gender identity, religion, things of that nature. So if you're targeting someone on those... specific.
So Facebook would say what Sarah Jung says in the New York Times tweeter is hate speech?
Yeah, I think so.
I don't know what Facebook would say. I know that I have been perplexed by what they define as hate speech and what they don't, what they the actions they've taken. And I think this is a really good example of it, where Jones is clearly violating their rules or was violating their rules for some time, and they didn't really take any action until Apple did. It just shows that maybe their standards are kind of dependent on what other tech platforms do.
Now, what would you say? Because before you open a can of worms, you have to come to some estimation of what's in the balance. Like, I know this is going to be a nightmare and it's difficult and it's possible, but here's what I'm going to accomplish. I'm going to, you know, world peace is at the other end of this. What can taking Alex Jones off Facebook actually change on planet Earth?
Well, again, my intention was not to take him off of Facebook or whatever. My intention was to call or draw attention to the fact that Facebook says they have these standards and they were not enforcing those policies.
No,
and that's been frustrating for a lot of people, particularly those who have reported harassment from individuals, and they get a message back from a tech platform that says, we reviewed this content and I didn't find any violations of our standards, which can be confusing. So Jones is the obvious example of someone who is violating Facebook standards or violating other tech platform standards.
Glenn has...
They were not taking any action against them. So maybe, I guess the question is, what's the purpose of having standards if you're not going to enforce them?
I think they should have no standards. And
there are platforms like, what is it, Gab or Gib? I forget how to pronounce it. But it's like Twitter with no standards, effectively. It's just free speech for all. It's absolutist free speech. And no one's going after them and saying, hey, you know, this makes no sense, because everyone knows they sign up for the platform and you're going to get free speech. It's unfettered.
Well, so nobody's heard of them.
Oh, it's a pretty popular thing among libertarians, right? Like, they have migrated over there to some extent.
Wait, no, I have a question.
No one goes to 8chan and says...
To what?
There's 8chan or 4chan and says, there's hate speech on here. Why aren't you censoring it? It's very obvious that if you're on that platform, you're going to get unfettered free speech. People are going to those platforms for that, and then people go to Facebook and they expect some protections there, and Facebook wasn't enforcing those.
Yes, Galen.
You said there should be no standards. So, what about child pornography? Like, where do you draw the line?
Yeah, I was about to say, there shouldn't be any standards, any
if it's legal.
Beyond the law,
Beyond what the law is.
Yeah.
I have a question for you, Noam, then.
Yeah.
Just playing devil's advocate here.
Yeah.
You have probably rules in the cellar. If someone walked in with their cell phone and started doing something, would you kick them out?
Started doing something what? Like
You're not allowed to have cell phones in the cellar.
Yeah.
If someone walked in and was...
What color are they? No, of
the
course.
Cell phone?
What's their sexual preference? No, of course we kick them out. Yeah, or we wouldn't kick them out, but of course we'd stop them.
I think you would. Your sign says you kick them out.
No,
right?
We don't. We normally, if somebody does that, we stop them right away and don't make a, you know.
If someone walked into your restaurant and made sexist or racist comments to your staff,
I would throw them out. I have thrown them out.
And so I think Twitter might be saying the same thing, or not Twitter actually, but Facebook might be saying the same thing. You're welcome to come in here. You're welcome to talk and share your ideas, but there are lines that we're going to draw. And if you're going to offend someone or be racist or attack a religion, we're going to ban you. And they don't even actually ban you outright initially. They warn you and they say, you got to stop. And if Alex Jones continues to post content that they say is in violation of those rules that they have drawn, that they've made clear to the users, then what are they supposed to do?
They should just not have the rules.
But you have, you have so many groups.
Well,
why
do you have rules? Why do you have rules in your restaurant
against that?
Like, Oliver, I think the answer is obvious. Like in a restaurant, first of all, the people who are being called these names don't choose to go there and go to Alex Jones' page or feed and see what he has to say. I mean, we have to have order in our place, and it's not a forum for people's opinions. And I mean, there's so many differences. I think that.
Well, I mean, to some extent, Alex Jones can tag someone or target someone for harassment on his Facebook page
Maybe they should find a way to not allow that. You know, that's not.
If they break the law, I think you guys.
No, I'm saying,
saying
maybe because maybe right. There should be privacy settings in Facebook that could protect somebody from,
like, someone random can't tag you.
Yeah,
but I think the difference is being whether Facebook should legally have the right to do it, which I think you would agree that they should legally, as a private entity, have the right to do whatever. But should they, as what they serve to the public, is it in the best interest right now to ban Alex Jones for the sake of having these nebulous rules where I do know people that get, like, kicked off for saying, like, I don't know, white men are trash or something, where to them they mean it as a sardonic thing. And, like,
my father said to me, one of the wisest things he ever said to me was, was it
where he says to fuck them all?
No. He's talking about a bartender who was stealing, and he said, listen, stealing is like masturbating. It's very tough to do it just once. And I think throwing people off Facebook is you are creating this thing, and it's just going to be, they're going to be a hammer. It's a hammer. Everything looks like a nail, and you're creating hammers, and they're going to start without any consistency and making hypocrites of themselves and banning it. Like already, we already pointed out, Sarah Zhang's not going to get banned. He is going to get banned. But my argument has been, well, if you believe that we need to throw Alex Jones off Facebook, you saw what I wrote. It's like, well, what are we saying? Like, then why shouldn't we tweak the First Amendment? Like, what is the logic? That's why I started by saying, what is to be gained by throwing him
off
Facebook?
Well, they're a business, and their gain may be, because they're a business, they want people to feel comfortable on their site. And perhaps as a business decision, it makes some sense, such that their users will now feel more comfy on the site. I don't know. I mean, as a business, does it make any sense, do you think?
But it became a dictatorship a little bit now.
Well, businesses are a dictatorship. Noam's a dictator right here at the Comedy Cellar.
Well, we know that, but I'm talking about Facebook.
I had written that you're right what you're saying. You're 100% right. That we need, as a society, to rediscover the wisdom of some of these civil rights that we have and why we respect them and why we think they led to a good society. The free exchange of ideas, the idea, the notion that nobody can really define what's an acceptable opinion and what's not an acceptable opinion. These were very important to our country and got us where we are. And the cure is worse than a disease. Yes, if you could just, if that was it, like Alex Jones and no one else was ever censored, whatever it is, then whatever. But what we're creating is a mentality that is spreading and spreading, that these bottlenecks of society, whether it's Facebook, the New York Times, Twitter, the Comedy Cellar booking policy, they have an obligation to protect me from reading or hearing something or seeing something that I don't want to hear, or that's disturbing to me. It's a microaggression. It's a trigger warning. And this has no... there's no end to it that I can see.
Well, I have a question.
I think it's a big mistake from a societal point of view. Facebook is powerful and big as a private entity in a way which no one ever could have conceived that a private entity could be.
Do you think it should be regulated then?
No, I don't think it should be.
How can you have those two things? You have to force it to comply, you know, according to you with, you know, standards of the First Amendment. But at the same time, you don't want, in terms of what speech they allow on the site, at the same time, you don't want to regulate it federally. I mean, if you want to control what Facebook can and cannot do with regards to its users, then you'd have to regulate it.
I want, and this is naive, I want the American public to change their attitude about what they expect to be protected from, such that then Facebook wouldn't feel, look, Facebook succumbed to pressure here. They didn't want to ban Alex Jones.
Is there poll data also on the users? Like, is it the Facebook users that want it, or is it, you know, media companies or whoever else that represents, like, is there reliable data that says that most Facebook users would rather be siloed away from this type of stuff?
Probably not. And pressure always comes. I mean, this is the thing that we never know. Like, these small vocal mobs who threaten boycotts, whatever they are, we don't even know if they actually could follow through if they actually, you know.
Wait, then maybe we shouldn't talk about Facebook necessarily, and we should talk about the larger culture. Because as far as Facebook is concerned, you know, they can and will do what they want to do as a business
until
they're regulated.
Facebook made a decision, I assume, based on their stock price and on their bottom line.
No, but they also testified in front of
Oliver Darcy, took him down,
who forced their hand.
But here's a question. This is
the second big thing Oliver's taken down. He took down Mark Halpern. Now he's taken down Facebook.
And he took down Sandra Hicks right here in the studio.
Yeah,
I
remember
his name. Yeah,
the third.
There's one point I want.
My favorite Holocaust denier.
I want to point. Yeah, but he doesn't want to admit it anymore.
Go ahead.
Facebook is an international company. So what about the hate speech or speeches from in other countries? You know, they don't control that.
Listen,
other people.
Yeah, no, what about when people were calling for genocide on Facebook?
Don't take my point.
Genocide? This is what I kept saying. Did you think that conspiracy theories, calls for genocide, all this stuff somehow didn't spread perfectly well, the weed of this, before Facebook? On the contrary, I think the best place to hear that kind of stuff is in an open forum.
Sunshine
where people
is
can
the best
answer
disinfectant.
Exactly.
Yeah,
I agree.
Right.
I agree. But
maybe
how
add something
do you do
into
that?
The mix here.
Yeah.
I think this
Wait,
is.
Can I tell you, Matt, you ever see David Duke's website? Have you ever gone to look at it?
No.
I've seen it. You know what? You know what would make it a lot less damaging? A fucking comment section. Go ahead.
I think in the last 10, 15 years, what you've seen is these technology companies have allowed individuals, conspiracy theorists or actual news platforms, but they've given everyone the same ability to broadcast their views, unfiltered really, to millions and millions of people, which they hadn't had before. Like Alex Jones would have been previously, you know, that kind of stuff would have been reserved for the fringe corners of society, and now it's allowed to be broadcast to millions of people, and they can share it, and they can tell their friends about it, and they might actually believe it. Or they can use that power to harass individuals, in the case of Alex Jones with the Sandy Hook
victims. All the more reason it needs the sunlight.
But what about
it? It can spread to millions of people without Facebook.
But what about scale?
The First Amendment, if we're using that, if we're talking about it, it allows for you to say something and not be thrown in jail by the government for saying that. It does not allow you necessarily to force a private corporation to broadcast your views to millions of people.
I'm using the First Amendment as an analogy. Because I'm saying, like, if we think that it's a good thing to sign, I said another thing. Look, okay, we get him off Facebook. Wait, he's still popping up in his own. So let's have all the ISPs ban him. Wait, now he's gone offshore. Okay, so maybe the thing to do is, well, I said, why go for the capillary? Let's go for the jugular. Let's tweak the First Amendment.
Let's kill him.
If this is really good,
let's
censor him.
Well, okay, here's my question.
Facebook has basically tweak their own what they regulate as free speech. They say we allow free speech with these restrictions.
They're not going to apply it.
But here's the thing, guys.
That's a fair argument that who's applying these standards across the board at Facebook? Are there open? Is there open transparency when they apply these standards? Who can you appeal to? Is the appeals process open and transparent? Those are fair questions.
What I'm saying so terrible about just letting them say it?
I think there's a really big difference between believing that Alex Jones has the right to say whatever the hell he wants and believing that he should be able to broadcast those views wherever the hell he wants, right? I mean, look, the company that I work for, ABC, would definitely not allow any of those things to be broadcast, and we would not be having a conversation here being like,
ABC,
oh my God,
editorial.
How dare ABC not broadcast Alex Jones.
ABC is presenting an editorially curated thing. This is
and
Facebook.
Mark Zuckerberg
an
is realizing that he's found himself in a place that is not literally just like a tube and is actually curating editorial content in many ways.
The New York Times had this article that in France, the spitting on Jews in the street, the Jews are fleeing France, and even the Times attributed this to the influx of North African Muslim immigration.
Okay, where is this guy?
Well, and I'm saying that if I had gone to Facebook 10 years ago and said, listen, we need to stop this immigration because the Muslims are going to start.
They're going to spit on the Jews.
Any of this stuff, somebody could say very easily, so that's hate speech. Get them off, because they don't fucking know. Nobody can tell what hate speech is. Nobody can tell. And Alex Jones may have said some things that cross line. Certainly not everything he said was hate speech.
I will 100% agree with you, Noam, that Facebook has put itself in a very difficult position.
It's a bad
culture. Two things I want to say. One is, again, you keep saying the First Amendment, like it's only in the U.S. It's the whole world, international. When it's a bigger scale, when you have videos against the U.S. or videos like the terrorists are using to to use this is all hate speeches. You know, why should we play the same game only here and upon like certain laws?
I don't have a problem with hate speeches. Guess what I'm saying.
I know. I'm adding to your point.
If I could push a button and it would stop, but I'm saying
anybody here arguing that people don't have the right to express themselves hatefully?
No.
I
think Noam's in accord that Facebook absolutely has the right to do whatever they want, but that if he were in charge, he would not do that. And that for society benefits, according to Noam, and I might agree with him, society would benefit from a completely open forum on, because Facebook has basically taken the place of pretty much everything, and Twitter has sort of become America's number one public square.
That's right.
And society would benefit if they were unrestricted.
Facebook would, I think, do very well to think of itself in terms of not the technicality of its private ownership, but in terms of the reality of its place in American society. That for Facebook to take censorious actions is in terms of its effect on our culture is not quite different from the American government telling you. A newspaper that it can or can't print something.
Well, thank God we have a free market, and if people don't like what Facebook is doing, they can take their business elsewhere.
Well, it's not that easy.
That's what might happen, though. Like, in the long run, it could be an experiment that plays out where Facebook's like, I mean, it's huge, but at one point you didn't think, like, I don't know, AOL would be taken down. Could totally be plausible that something happens or a sector within it, or they choose at a certain point to make a distinction when you join whether you want to be protected from stuff or you don't.
Yeah, but I thought my other point was pretty strong, which is about, like, David, you see these right-wing supremacist websites. Imagine how much less threatening they would be if they were forced to have a comment section, if people could refute some of these facts, Well, then I guess we don't believe sunlight's the best disinfectant. Then let's stop bullshitting.
A comment section on David Duke's website wouldn't.
I'm saying, is Alex Jones more of a threat to us, banned on Facebook or out in the open on Facebook, disinfected with sunlight or not?
Is he more of a threat to us?
Yeah, we're worried about his effect on American culture.
It is a good question whether sunlight is always the best disinfectant, and you could make a lot of arguments for and against.
This used to be part of our
noteworthy,
national...
though. Everyone, you sign up for Facebook, you are told that you are not allowed to post hate speech. This is not a surprise to anyone. The real surprise is that Facebook is actually enforcing their own rules.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah. And also just the mystery of how specific that enforcement is.
Yeah, and how they do.
But I think Oliver brought up an interesting point. Maybe sunlight, perhaps, is not always the best disinfectant. Is that what you were saying?
You know, I think, in other words, is it possible
that certain people are so convincing and so beguiling in their rhetoric that they can create hatred where hatred did not exist before?
That people are so convincing, it's also that they're... are a lot of people who just won't actually digest some of the facts and realize that this has been debunked, particularly depending on where that comes from. If it's, let's say, the New York Times, someone might say, I don't trust the New York Times, I trust Fox News. And no matter what Fox News says, if it's true or not, they will not trust anyone debunking it. I think people have been siloed into their own spaces for so long that it's difficult to say sunlight's this best disinfectant because sunlight appears not to be reaching a good portion of the population.
Sure.
I don't know. If that makes any sense.
I have had many conversations with people like Hassan, for instance. Remember Hassan?
Mm-hmm.
Where they would say things like about Israel. It was clearly hate speech. You know, got yeah. it. And I never regretted engaging in the conversation. It always was a better thing to engage in the conversation. I believe very strongly in the exchange of ideas and that the only way you're going to take somebody down is to refute them with logic and facts.
But are there people out there impervious to logic that
yeah,
for
and they're going to seek out Alex Jones? That's what I'm saying. They're going to find him on his website. So let's tweak the First Amendment and let's ban him. Let's censor him.
A side point about the staff and stuff like that. Sometimes I was thinking about how this place and. It's so funny. We had two people that work here. One was, friends with Noam that fought in the same war against each other.
Yeah.
But they still here, nice and friendly and know everything. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. But look, when we were doing our debates,
about Hassan and George?
Hassan and George.
No, not
Tawil
Hassan.
And George.
No. Gamal.
Too. So when we were doing our debates, Tawil's we were looking for fight. Topics. We did the Iran thing. And I wanted to have a debate about the Holocaust. Like I wanted to get some real, like the real deal Holocaust deniers.
Yeah.
And have a debate about it. And people was like, what, you don't believe the Holocaust? Of course I believe the Holocaust. But I thought that, like, how does this Holocaust denial spread? It spreads by people reading it in context where there's never anybody explaining to them, no, that's ridiculous.
Exactly.
They pose a lot of mysterious questions. They blah, 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 and there's nobody there to counter it. And it's done in a book or in a special website. And that's how it spreads. It's not going to spread on Facebook, something that ridiculous, if somebody can then post the stats and the real thing. I mean, some people will believe it, but fewer.
Also somebody to counter it in like a relatively patient way rather than like you're a fucking loon, you know.
I mean, it's a debate. So if somebody say it doesn't happen, you can listen to him and try to see what they're talking about, you know. Like I'm trying to get something like here for the Holocaust for the show. And it just really hit, like I have a lot of people that denies it, but they're not going to say it in public.
So this is a perfect example. Oliver, you think about it. Like I'm a Jew. Holocaust denial is important to me. I think... out of total self-interest, it would be terrible if Facebook banned a Holocaust denier page. I think it would just put fuel for the Holocaust deniers.
Well, they would post that misattributed Voltaire quote. If you want to, was that misattributed quote that everybody posts? Like, if you want to know who's ruling you, then find out who you cannot criticize or something like that. In other words, if people say that, if you can't say it, that means it must be true. That's why they're trying to shut us up.
The trans community is in charge of this country.
When you're trying to shut people... So if you shut down a Holocaust page, then people say, see, the Jews are afraid the truth will get out.
But it's even more than that. It's a culture that, like in the Middle East, it's huge. Like in schools, you take classes that you it didn't happen, never happened, it's a lie, all this. You know, I was in Amsterdam, I was with few...
What grade did you get in that class?
Oh,
an
me?
A? Oh, A+. I got it. Go ahead.
I got a.
I got an A plus in Holocaust denial.
6 million out of 6 million.
I was gonna say something, but I don't. That's the thing. It's like I don't know how far you can take shit.
Go ahead.
But you try. I went to Amsterdam with like four of my friends, and we wanna go to Anne Frank's house, and they're like, okay, let's go. And two of my friends are like, no, we're not going. It's just fucking Jews.
We're gonna hotbox. Yeah.
I'm talking about educated people. You know. And like drink everything. They're not even. And one friend of mine is like, what's wrong with you guys? I'm going to go with them. We stayed in line for 2 hours, watched the thing. It's heartbreaking, you know? And then when it came out to the souvenir, I was like, are you going to buy something? I was like, I'm not buying for him. True story. I swear to God. He's like, I'm not buying for my daughter. I was like, hey, what's wrong with you? It's just like, you know? So the stories, you know, the education when you grow up, it's the same thing with the Jews. You know, not everybody's like Noam or like, are you Jewish?
Like Dan. Yeah, yeah.
Yes, close. He is.
I'm technically Jewish.
Or like Dan and open up. No, there's a lot of Jews that are always, that also arrogant and, that don't want to share information. And hey, it's true.
You said you were going to do the Holocaust denier segment another night when I'm not here. So let's not.
Okay.
You're nervous about
so,
it.
Let's talk about.
Wait, hear what he's saying now. You're worried about this sticking to you.
No.
Are you not worried about this?
I mean, I it's just not the conversation I signed up for, so I didn't think about it deeply before I arrived.
Oh, I thought you were worried about the...
So let's talk about the Trump tweet today, that he is willing to shut down the government if the Democrats...
That was today?
Don't give enough. Yeah. Was it today?
It was
or
a
yes?
few days ago. It was like
yesterday.
Ago.
I thought it was. No, no.
Maybe he retweeted it.
Yeah. If they don't give the vote for the wall.
Yeah, but I tweeted that like a week or two ago.
I'm not sure. So what do you guys think about that?
Are you allowed to say? You're not allowed to say.
I don't really have any thoughts on it. I don't know. It's not surprising.
But is he serious? Can he do it again? Or
I think hasn't there been some reporting that he has told aides that he is willing to shift back and forth on this one?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I wouldn't be surprised if he's using this as a negotiating tactic.
But how serious is he, like, to do the
I'm
going to
say I wouldn't take his tweets too seriously.
Yeah.
No, but
I know that's a drastic opinion.
But the wall, it seems Trump is one of the presidents that actually followed up with his promises. You know, I think...
He has followed up a lot of promises, but his tweets are not his promises.
Yeah, no, I'm saying, but he's still with the wall thing. So do you think it's going to happen, Galen?
Do I think that he's going to build a wall from side... to side now
with a big beautiful gate or entrance.
What are 538's percentages on this one?
Yeah, we've actually modeled how likely it is that Donald Trump will build the wall. No,
well, if the Democrats take the House, it's done.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it doesn't seem like in the past even Republicans in Congress have taken the task of building a wall from one side of the United States to the other next to Mexico all that seriously. So, and it can't really, I mean, whatever, if you look at Ann Coulter's Twitter feed, she'll say that she thinks the National Guard or whatever should be building the wall. He should call in the troops to build it, but otherwise unilaterally he can't do it. And if the Republican Congress isn't even taking him seriously, then why would we expect it to get built?
I think Galen's right.
That's okay.
Do you think they should build a wall? Well, this is not the question.
I'm not a policy guy. I have no idea. I mean, you could look up the policies and you could figure out whether or not it's a good idea. I mean, depending on what your goals are. If you want to employ wall builders, it's a great idea.
Trump always, you know, does things ass backwards. But the question is to anybody is like, do you think we should control the border?
Of course.
Of course is not at all the answer that at least 35% of the country, in my estimation, would give.
I think
talked
about
Wait, that's so made up.
No,
so you think that 35% of the country would say that we should have open borders, is what you're saying?
No, I think that they
and
would.
No enforcement
whatsoever. I think you
wouldn't
be able to pin them down. But I think that if you ask them, if you said, listen, do you think you control the border? They'd be like, yes. It's like, okay, so what do we do with a family that shows up, you know, gets over the border? They'd be like, well, you know, we just release them. Like, well, what about putting them in jail? I mean, they don't actually have the heart to say, yeah, you know what, control the border and send them back or do what you got to do.
Which is reflected in our current system where we have laws that say control the border and they're not enforced or they're not enforced effectively.
Yeah, that's what I think if you really examine people's thing, they don't know what they want.
I think we talked about this in another podcast, but there's also like if you do take whether it's the fringe or whether it's 35% of the people who might believe in open borders, those also often happen to be the same people that believe in a lot of like welfare programs or universal basic income and things like that. And eventually there comes some juxtaposition where you have to like, well, what happens? Is it universal basic income for the whole world if they choose to come here because we have universal basic income? Like, how do you figure out that conflict where like you want to provide these things for society, but you also don't have a line between what is our society and what's the rest of the world?
I think Trump has made it very difficult for a lot of people to get on board with the control the border thing because he's dehumanized illegal immigrants in the way he talks about
them. He's made it a dog whistle to like have a conservative
calling them criminals, calling this, calling that. So you feel like if you want to agree with him on it, like you have to now agree with that kind of attitude about illegal immigrants. And that's very difficult for people. I mean, that's, you know, disgusting for people to do. So he's actually, I think, hardened their position the other way. I think if he would speak kindly to them. Go ahead.
It's pretty clear if you look at the polling that Republicans and Democrats used to view immigration pretty similarly in terms of how much it benefits the country.
Sanders was against it, yeah.
Yeah, the left has evolved a lot in the direction towards favoring immigration. I mean, in the past, there was not a big split, and the majority of Americans didn't see, like, large numbers of immigration as a net benefit for the country. But in the Trump era, where I think the left is inclined to be reflexively opposed to anything that comes out of Trump's mouth, yeah, it is. It is really hard. And, you know, I've heard people on the left say, I don't even think we should be having this conversation until Trump is out of office because, you know, he's poisoned the well too much. Because it has become a conversation that I think it's hard to deny that a large part of the conversation is about race now, and not about, you know, what level of low-skilled immigration should we allow in the country? What level of high-skilled immigration should we allow in the country, et cetera?
I'm not convinced Trump actually sees it in terms of race. I know there's you can make the argument, and it's not a ridiculous
argument.
Well,
we definitely shouldn't argue what's in Trump's mind, because we have no idea.
Yeah.
But a lot of the left also seems to make it, whether it is intentionally from his mouth or not, primarily about race.
If I had to guess, I would say there's a racial component to Trump's views on immigration. It may not be overwhelming. I suspect there's some component in there. It'd be hard to imagine he'd have the same rhetoric if they were Norwegians. Didn't he say we could use more Norwegians?
He did.
Something of that nature. But we don't know. You're right. We don't know what he's thinking.
Was it short?
Yeah, I mean, it's not really worth debating.
If I had to guess, well, I think it's an interesting discussion. But if I had to guess, I would say there's some component.
But it also doesn't matter because the debate doesn't reside just inside of his mind now. The debate is a nationwide debate.
But let's reverse the colors of Canada and Mexico. Everything's exactly the same. The attitude is about America. The not wanting to speak. Nicely about the that came out wrong, but the stubborn clinging to wanting the second language to be spoken in schools and whatever it is, everything's exactly the opposite. Do you think in that Trump would then side with the people of color Canadians or not? I expressed that. I couldn't have said that worse.
Yes,
if you control for everything.
If Mexico
were
the exact
the
same, except everybody was white.
And Canada was exactly the same, except they
were mostly
of color. Do you think Trump would then be saying, well, I don't want the Canadians in, but take as many Mexicans?
Where's the drug war? It doesn't matter.
The drug war is in white Canada. The different languages in white Canada. The feeling that America.
White Canada south of us.
Yes.
Okay.
The 40% to 30% of various states, homes that speak Spanish as the first language. But these are white homes now. Everything about Mexico is the same, except now it's white.
I do believe Trump.
Do you think Trump would now be siding with Canada?
No, like I said, I don't think Trump. I don't think it's 100% race. I think there's a component in there that adds to. I agree with you. I think if Mexico were the exact same but white, Trump would still be trying to limit immigration. I think there's a component that would make it 10% less. I don't know what.
When you hate black people.
You know, he sees people of color and he doesn't. I think he's more likely to think poorly of them.
Maybe. When you hate black people,
you know,
you would rather your daughter marry a white ditch digger, if that's, you know, I don't want to say anything bad about ditch diggers, than a black PhD. Because you don't like black people. It has nothing to do with anything but the fact of their color. And I'm saying that Mexico is kind of a basket case. And until recently, a lot of people thought, not just on the right, that cheap labor was bad for the country, and even Krugman had written a column. Now, he may have revised his opinion, but it was a credible opinion like 5-6 years ago. Paul Krugman wrote that cheap labor is bad for the country, and they don't embrace I mean, I have tons of Mexican employees. Their attitude about Thomas Jefferson, it's like they're not really eager in many of them anyway I'm getting myself in big trouble. But I'm saying that the typical
35%.
Everyone go around and say your attitude about Thomas Jefferson.
Well, they didn't like his stance on agrarian versus I don't know.
We didn't get very far.
There is the third world, which does not love the West the way the West loves the West. They have an ambivalent opinion about us, with absolute justification. Mexico, I don't know the history, but if a Mexican said, listen, you took our land, Arizona really should be ours, I'm like, yeah, you might be right. It might have been a total atrocity that we took this land. But the average Norwegian doesn't care when he comes to Arizona. He just lives in Arizona. But a Mexican can come down and say, like, this is but, you know, no, I didn't come here to be an American. I came here to spread. Who the fuck knows?
I don't really
going
know
down?
If I any of this is true. We're kind of like I, just making up.
I'm just saying, I think there's a component.
I'm giving the devil's advocate argument.
So I didn't say that's the entire crux of Trump's attitude toward immigrants. I say, I think it's a component. Like a better analogy than the guy says, I would rather my daughter marry a white ditch digger than a black PhD, is a guy that says, you know, everything else being equal, I'd rather she married a white guy. And I think that's more where Trump might be.
Yes.
You know.
I could agree with that. And it's so offensive when he fights the fight on saying they're criminals. They're not criminals.
Yeah, it's interesting that he's chosen that fight even more aggressively than the economic fight.
Even when they were separating the children.
But again, I'm not going to try to guess.
I think because of the M13 thing rising lately. So that's...
And plays to his base.
Oh, well, that was right. That.
It's horrible.
The economic disenfranchisement, I guess, doesn't that also play to his base? I don't know. Maybe.
It does. I just want to say, though, about the Mexican immigrants. As somebody who came over here and has talked to, like, other immigrants
Where
from...
Where you come from? Russia?
Ukraine. But somebody who...
Are you a Russian loyalist, or are you, like, a Ukrainian?
I don't give a fuck, really. I think it depends on what specific, like, issue you're talking about. But it was all USSR when I lived there. But just generally, when I talk to other people who are here as, like, zero generation, regardless of your thoughts on, like, history or anything like that, if your homeland is fucked up and you're not able to earn a living and feed your family, and there's a place here that allows you to do that and has a system, whatever the other history or whatever it is that's allowed you to, like, feed your kids and find a way to make a living here, like, generally, you're going to revere America. You're not really thinking about it in that complex terms if this is just giving you the opportunity to actually, like, live your life in safety and, like, economic stability.
I'm not sure. There was that Samuel Huntington article, which was kind of coming through me when I was trying to talk about this stuff. Now, Samuel Huntington is nobody's racist, and he had written an article, like, 15 years ago about the, what was it called, the Hispanic problem, whatever, where he described how they were different than many other immigrant waves in terms of their attitudes about America.
Mexican or Hispanic?
I think he just talked about Hispanic, but that in real life, that's mostly Mexican in our country, right? That they took generations to start speaking, adopting English as opposed to years. This is all a lot of stuff. And then Linda Chavez, she kind of refuted it, saying, well, actually, the data shows like in two or three generations, they intermarry and they lose it. But didn't answer the question, well, why two or three generations as opposed to fresh off the boat like a lot of Eastern European immigrants were, like, immediately as soon as they got here, like, I'm American, you know? And
I don't know if that's true either.
No, this was, well, I don't know if it's made up. These were scholarly things going back and forth that I read. I could send it to you.
I mean, even if it is true, it's one specific unit of measurement. So, like, let's say it's also, like, saying a lot to say that, like, because they took, let's say, two or three generations to learn English, that's an indicative of some other things about their belief system about America. The why I asked Hispanics was because there's a ton of Cuban immigrants who are, like, straight up right wing in Miami and you know, have an entirely different
belief. They're a tiny number.
Sure.
A tiny number. But just to say, like, it's not necessarily Hispanic. It could be a correlation with another thing. And so, like, anyway, I know Russians that are in Brighton Beach that don't learn English till they come here and die living off, you know, the benefit of America. It happens in, like, all communities and stuff. But again, it's also, maybe there is a cultural thing there, but it's still not necessarily correlated.
So let me read a little bit, because this is this was an important article. It's been debunked, or some people have debunked it, but at the time, so he says, it's called The Hispanic Challenge, and Samuel Huntington is not a right-wing guy. So the persistent inflow of Hispanic immigrants threatens to divide the United States into two peoples, two cultures, and two languages. Unlike past immigrant groups, Mexicans and other Latinos have not assimilated into mainstream U.S. culture, forming instead their own political and linguistic enclaves from Los Angeles to Miami and rejecting the Anglo-Protestant values that built the American dream. The United States ignores this challenge at its peril.
Wait, so if this was debunked, why are we reading it or debating it?
I don't know. Debunked may be too strong a word. People have said things which... they believe debunked it. It's not.
It's been refuted.
Yeah,
refuted. It's been contested.
Yeah, it's contested. But if you read the article, I have to say, a lot of what he describes does line up anecdotally with my experience knowing Mexican immigrants. And you know, this is going to easily twist out something bad about them. I'm not saying the slightest thing bad
about
them.
Wait, so what's the long term? What's the large argument that you're making here?
Well, his argument is that, in the end, we're going to become somewhat of a house divided. And the best argument that I read against him is that over many years, eventually through intermarriage, this kind of this problem is mitigated.
I mean, you grew up in New York City, right? I mean, I think it's hard for anybody who has spent a lot of time here or grew up here to not realize that New York is made up of white, was made up of white ethnic neighborhoods that stayed that way for many generations. And so, I mean, I don't have the research. You know, you said this was debunked. I don't know. I don't really know very much about this article. I don't know what debunked it. But I mean, I think anybody who spent time in New York doesn't have a similar experience with what white immigrant communities did when they came to America.
What do you mean?
In that if you go anywhere in Brooklyn, you can't throw a stone without hitting a white ethnic neighborhood where people spoke the language that they arrived in America speaking for many generations and did not intermarry and stayed kind of like closed off in their own ethnic neighborhood.
Listen, people come from the old country, maybe, but if I mean, my experience, like the older Jewish people I knew, no, those kids, English...
Have you ever been to South Williamsburg?
No.
Well, okay, well, there you go.
Well, the Hasidim, and Noam, by the way, has clearly stated he don't want more Hasidim in America.
But let's replace that's perfect example. Let's replace Mexican for this conversation with Hasidic.
But they still have to wear the suits.
Now, do I think that a wave of 5 million Hasidic would be a good thing for this country? No.
Hell no.
It'd be terrible for the country. Now, that's not to say that the Mexicans are... as
so now it's 5 separative,
not as separative as separatist, whatever the word is, if their attitude is the same as Hasidic. But to the extent that it is, an ethnic group can have an attitude that is not the best for the idea of assimilation.
Well, suffice it to say
and
that
it's okay to
I think we can
it.
All agree that at a certain number, certainly a certain number of all one linguistic cultural group coming to America, and I don't know what that number would be, would have an effect on the culture. You might think it's a good effect. I mean, Miami right now, I think we can all agree, has changed because of the Cuban influx. There's a lot of white people are leaving because they can't function in Spanish. You now need to speak Spanish to get jobs in many cases. And look, I love Spanish. I think it's sexy as hell, and I love Miami. But you can't deny that Miami has changed.
Or that number exists. That number exists at a certain point.
That some number of people exist, whatever that number would be, that if all of them came here, America would change. You might say for the better, but America would change fundamentally.
Yeah, that's happened many times over in American history.
Okay, but when's it happen? I mean, it happened when white people replaced Indians.
I guess the question is what's meaningful change as far as America goes? And then also, like, if it's a cultural difference, is it inherently a racist thing to try to compare those cultural differences, right? Because you can have a culture that doesn't assimilate the same way. Is it necessarily, oh, he's racist against whomever because that culture takes three generations or
whatever? I think any large group of people, sufficiently large, if you look at Quebec, a sufficiently large number of, you know, of English people and a sufficiently large number of French people create, I mean, they do okay, but there's still some conflict.
Yeah, and we've never had...
I mean, Jews have dramatically changed New York since there's been, like, massive Jewish immigration to New York, me included. I'm a product of part of that massive Jewish immigration
a lot of
to
but
New York.
Listen, you know, I wanted to introduce into the lexicon a new cognitive bias. You know how there's, like, this one true Scotsman and confirmation bias and all these things? And I've said this before. I would like to coin the Elvis bias. And the Elvis bias is the following. Just because an argument was alarmist and proved untrue in the past doesn't mean that it's untrue in the present. So when parents were all upset about their kids watching Elvis Presley being over-sexualized and trying to, that we look back on it now and say they were ridiculous, that does not mean that when I don't want my daughter to watch a very sexual rap video with simulated intercourse today, that I'm wrong. And we get this a lot, that because something in the past turned out not to be true, the racists of the past were alarmed by immigration. They were against it. They were wrong. We know they were wrong. That can't be shorthand for still looking at it and say, well, okay, but there's differences now. This is a contiguous country. It's not coming off a boat totally cutting
Mexico's continent.
Yeah, I mean, cutting all contact with the whole country, not only leaving that country, but hating that country that they came from. I mean, fuck, Jews hated those. A Jew from Poland had some sentimentality about Poland. That was fucking hell. He was leaving hell. No long distance phone calls. No text messaging to America, and America was sent from heaven.
I just don't know what happened.
There is something different from leaving Mexico, where you've been raised, like Hatan says, about Reconquista and how America, I don't know if they raised Reconquista, but how America took their land or whatever, and it's right next door, and there's still text messaging, and you can go back and visit, and there's 1 foot in each country. That may not turn out the same way. And in numbers...
Yeah, but we have no idea. You're not citing any data to prove the sentiment of any of the people that you're talking about.
We have no idea, but we're betting the house on black, you know? I mean, or on red, whatever. Like, we're red. Because if it doesn't work out, there's no going back. That's the point. That's all I'm saying.
Okay, but if you're going to have a debate about it, if you're going to try to suggest that this is a possibility, come to the table with data.
Debate would be control. And I'm speaking very much devil's advocate here, because I could give the other side of this argument. But the debate would be control the border, and then let's debate it. You don't get to win the debate by the fact that
you can't just come up with these pictures in your mind of the way that people were or the way that people are and expect everybody who's listening to this podcast to just believe you this picture in your mind. Actually want to establish the way that things were or the way that things are, bring the data to the table next time.
There was just an article this week about
oh my God, another like anecdotal article. Oh my God, now we're all convinced.
No, it wasn't an anecdotal
article. But I'm just saying,
don't
make assertions. Come to the table with real evidence.
Well, I started to give you evidence. It was an article this week about the states.
Well, Norm is saying there is no evidence because we're projecting into the future, into the unknown, and so necessarily we don't know. The question is we have to make our best guess as to whether these policies are good or bad.
And so we might as well pull a best guess out of our ass instead of actually looking at data
guess. By keeping the borders the way they are, we're also pulling it out of our ass. You know,
I'm not making an argument anyway. I'm just saying come to the table with information.
A decision has to be made right now is the point.
Okay, make a decision.
The decision, in other words, make what do we decision. Do about the border, has to be decided. And right now we have to enact a policy.
Well,
we
do? Well, a policy isn't going to be enacted, so...
Well, we do have current immigration law.
When is comprehensive immigration reform policy going to be enacted? Right now? Yeah, exactly. No. What are you saying?
I'm saying that we have to, even if we don't have all the data and all the information and perfect omniscience, we still have to pass laws.
Okay, 22% of the nation, according to the Migration Policy Institute, does not speak English at home. The highest percentage ever. The share was highest in Nevada. 31% of the homes in Nevada don't speak English. Now, does that make you a racist? You know, that might not be so good for the social fabric. Like, have we ever really... What if 31% of New York spoke Yiddish? I'm serious. Like, 31% in there, like...
My grandma would love that.
Is that really...
I'm pretty sure a third of the population of New York City is foreign-born.
Yeah, but if 31%... not only didn't speak English, but actually spoke one particular language. Because it matters if you have a scattered out amongst a bunch of languages. Is it crazy to say, you know, that may not, like, if we're going to decide for ourselves what direction this country goes in, that doesn't sound like the direction we would choose. We would try to scatter it all around. We try to encourage the melting pot. We try to encourage assimilation.
Okay, you said you could also make the opposite argument. Now make the opposite.
The opposite
argument
is that we have an aging population. We need the immigrants more than ever, as opposed to Europe, which is solving this with cultures that are quite much more different to the mainstream culture, like North Africans in France, whatever it is, where they really are having a horrible time getting along. Mexicans are Christians and, you know, basically in many, many ways part of the West. And they are amazingly hardworking, much... We know that immigrant labor is much, much better than American labor. At least I know it as a boss. I'm pretty sure there's data on that. And if you think that we'd be better off if you can blink an eye and get rid of all the illegal immigrants, you're fucking out of your mind. It would be a disaster. It would be a total disaster.
Not to
mention
Spanish is a sexy language.
Yeah, but what I wish could happen is never going to happen. I just wish that somehow...
So is this still just devil's advocate? Are you
saying
this is what I actually believe.
I believe that we could split the difference, which is, of course, let them come in, but don't have bilingual education. I'm serious. We know that kids learn, they learn in bilingual classes. They learn to keep speaking their mother tongue. let's insist that they let's do everything we can to reinvigorate the melting pot. Let's have national service. Let's put people in barracks together of black, white, Hispanic, whatever it is. Let's have a show of concern for wanting to, as I said in one of my emails, what happens when pluribus no longer wants to become unum? That's what worries me. And I fear that that's where we are, where the from many one, that the many no longer want to become one. That is, I think, the only thing we have to worry about. Otherwise, it's racism. I don't really care what color or country anybody comes from. I worry that the end, we don't have a country that wants to become one. And I liked having a country that wanted to become one.
Well, of course, there are those that say that the nation state is dead and the whole idea of countries is passe and we don't need them anymore.
Open borders.
So, yeah, we've got to wrap it up, though.
Yeah. So I want to hear what Rich Voss has to what I say. Said. That was actually my opinion. What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, my opinions don't really matter. I'm just saying that if we're going to have an argument one way or another, that you should bring data to the table.
It's fucking 538 pencil neck.
Oliver,
like I said, I'm not a policy person. I have no idea.
Can I say something about Oliver? I don't like the new CNN big shot Oliver who's afraid to say anything on a podcast because he knows it ruined his career.
I lost what you guys were talking about. But it did not look as water as I wanted.
We're going to take Dan next.
You're Persian, right?
Yeah.
And how did you, your first generation, you were born here or not?
Yeah.
You were born here.
Yeah.
And how did your parents come here?
They migrated here.
Legally?
Yeah.
Legally. Did they have to wait in a lottery or anything?
I'm not entirely sure. I think there was, my mother came here through a foster parent. I'm not really sure, but my father.
Do white people smell like wet dog? this was asserted by Sarah Jong in a tweet.
Wait. And what your parents' attitudes about the country?
Yeah.
How would you describe them?
They love America.
They love America.
Yeah. I think most immigrants that come here love America.
Do they?
That's what I was saying.
Yeah.
Such a well immigrant line.
Yeah.
They're very proud of their citizenship. I know that some of my family has their citizenship on the wall.
My parents could never understand the obsession with baseball.
Jews love baseball.
Well, not Canadian Jews. No.
Yeah.
So that was their beef with America.
So you know what we should do, and we could even reconvene the same panel. I would love to bring on this panel, so I don't sound like a Archie Bunker. I would like to bring on this panel some of the Mexican and Dominican people who work for me, and have the discussion with them, and let them tell us about the attitudes that they hear in their homes.
Do
and
they have a choice?
Whatever it is.
Or someone you fired.
No, I have no choice.
someone you fired.
Because I've had many of these conversations. Many of these conversations. You've seen them with Franco, right?
I've heard tell.
Yeah. And and it's possible that this is just a totally statistical anomaly and that this group of, you know, 7-8 people is just a total fluke and does not represent the greater community at all. I don't say that flippantly, or I mean it is possible, but it's also more likely that it does represent something. And when you hear it, you say to yourself, uh-oh, this may not be my father's immigrant culture. This may be a different attitude about coming to America.
So what is the attitude that you have observed amongst
not liking Thomas
very
Jefferson.
Merc and what's the word for just for money? There's a word for it.
Anyway, mercenary.
Very mercenary.
All right, let's end the podcast. It's 10:11.
Oh, Galen.
Galen.
That sounds very American to me, by the way.
Any other questions you have?
No. Oh, my God, capitalism.
No.
No, you have any other questions?
I want Oliver to talk more.
I don't know what I'm going to say.
About anything.
Apologize to Alex Jones.
Yeah.
Oh. His fans are sending me very mean messages.
Do they
attack? Read them.
Throughout the time.
Do they
here.
Attack the color of your skin?
And I don't know. In some cases, they probably do.
Oh, is that what you were showing?
Yeah, they found my Instagram.
What kind of thing did
they
say?
They just discovered my Instagram, and they're trying.
Because Oliver Darcy sounds like a character from
Pride and Prejudice.
Yeah, Pride and Prejudice.
Very
do they
Austin.
Know that you're of
one,
color,
Mr. Darcy?
One person.
Well, how's Darcy of color?
How's Darcy a Persian name?
It's not. My father's name was Madarcy, and they got split into somehow on the lines. Now it's he took the name Kayvon M. Darcy. Bam Darcy.
And they're Muslim practicing?
No.
Zoroastrian?
What?
Zoroastrian? Isn't that another big religion in
Persia? I don't know. My mother practices Christianity and my father passed, so I can't.
doesn't practice anything.
And what's your problem, Galen? You usually like these conversations. Are you worried about the fact that this is gonna that somebody could listen to this? Tell the truth.
Somebody.
Am
could
I
listen
worried
to
about
this?
The fact that somebody?
Because my theory, everybody's just worried about, you know, getting tarred with something that was said in their presence on Twitter or whatever for their career.
I mean, this is what I'm doing here. This is what I do on Twitter. This is what I do generally in public. Is that I say that as a journalist, my opinion doesn't matter. What I can best do is be a conduit for information that helps people understand the world better.
Right.
And so if you and I are going to have a private conversation over drinks sometime, maybe I'll talk to you about my personal beliefs, and then they might be relevant because then we'll be having drinks as friends. But as far as what I say publicly, I really don't think that my opinion on policy matters. And so
I wish you
would have
told
us
that before we invited you on. What do you think you're here for? Obviously,
this
we want
like
your opinion.
Drinks as friends.
No, I, with a lot of other people.
I mean, hopefully, if I have data in hand, I can help illuminate some of the things you're saying by talking about trends, like, for example, that, you know, Democrats used to believe, just like Republicans, that high levels of immigration did not, you know, help the were not like a net benefit to the country, and that things have changed in the current environment. I think like things like that are relevant, help you understand, you know, where the left is today, where the right is today.
And I think
this is going to be kind of hypocritical because this is an opinion, but I think when everyone just mouths off about their own opinions based on whatever like random little anecdotal experiences they've had, especially if they're journalists who just mouth off about their opinions, I think it's cheap. I don't think it's thoughtful. And I think it's deleterious actually to the news media as a whole.
Deleterious means it's harmful.
All of
is that sure?
I thought I meant
exactly
it was fun.
That's good. That's the Galen I wanted.
There you go.
Yeah. So I believe everybody's afraid to, you know, say the wrong thing on the air. And this is comes back to where we started. And I think that this banning on Facebook, this all is feeding this mentality. I use the word intersectionality. I don't think you can separate wanting to see Alex Jones banned on Facebook from wanting to go through somebody's old tweets, to wanting somebody to fire somebody because they did something, to wanting a trigger warning.
I have an opinion, fundamentally tied to the job that we do as journalists, which is I'm inclined to support free speech. So, like, whether or not Facebook can do whatever the hell it wants is up to Facebook. But I think free speech is a good thing. I'm glad we live in a country that has a strong First Amendment, and free speech is important.
And by the way, the last thing because I'm going to say is, do you know how ironic it is that the who benefits from illegal immigrants, any immigrants, is rich white people, right? I mean, who owns the businesses that can pay less wage? Who gets the childcare? Who gets the gardening? If you took the immigrants out, who would be the ones hurting? Not the people protesting for the immigrants. It would be the people who are complaining about the immigrants. It's ridiculous. I'm right about that, no?
I don't know. I have no data on this. I don't know.
I don't know.
I'm not an immigration policy expert.
Well, people with money are the ones who have the ability to hire nannies and gardeners and have gardens and all this stuff.
They're definitely not the ones competing with them for labor.
That's right. And the people who own businesses are the ones who benefit from the labor if it is indeed cheaper or even if it's just better.
You could argue when goods or services are cheap, it makes goods and services cheap
for everyone. Right, that's what I was gonna say. I don't know. We don't have any data on this, so let's.
I'll get you data. So yeah, that's a good idea. We reschedule the same panel. We'll get some of you.
Would you guys do that? Because I think it'd be interesting to get some.
More anecdotal evidence.
Yes.
Well, no,
we're gonna bring data to the table.
Listen,
you know what,
Mr. 538 anecdotal evidence. How well was your scientific evidence in the election? I mean, you know,
it was there. We're taking.
There's a place.
So it looks like we're actually gonna spend the next 30 minutes talking about the sins of 538 in the 2016 election.
You know, I defended it, but there is anecdotal evidence is risky, but it's not on the face of it wrong. I mean, everything that we're saying about the Hasidic community, for instance, that we all kind of conjure up the same images. We've all been on airplanes with a Hasidic.
You know it. I know it. Everyone.
That's all anecdotal, but I don't think anybody would say, well, I know you say that, but. You say that they wear black all the time, but you know, I haven't seen the data on that. It's anecdotal. I mean, at some point, we do accept anecdotal evidence. It's, you know, it's not really fair just to dismiss anything as anecdotal, is it?
Correct. Like some things are just accepted reality. Like the sky is blue. I'm not going to ask you to show me data.
I'm saying if you see something, a pattern, with enough regularity, you should always say, well, I had to be careful because there is a chance this isn't true. But the more you see it, the more you have a right to say, I think this is a real phenomenon in the world that I'm not just, you know, it could be anecdotal, but whatever, right?
And to be continued, because we got to wrap it up. Oliver, you want to share your information? Taking down Alex Jones?
No, I'm tired of his followers harassing me. You know, they probably received, I don't know how many thousand messages over the past 24 hours, and now they've discovered my Instagram, which is annoying.
Have you gotten any death threats? Because that's when you know you're like you really arrived.
I don't read them. I don't read. I mean, there's been like, I would say at least at this point 20,000 tweets at me. I don't know. I haven't read them. So, but.
You don't want to. Okay, let's not share your information.
Are you
going
to counter tweet or counter troll?
Counter troll.
No, I'm ignoring him. You know, there's not much you can do. There's.
Can I get a shout out? Bring him over.
Yeah,
bring
Boris. Him over my go
way. The Boris K on everything.
And Nadiman.
At Dan Nadiman.
At Dan Nadiman. Galen.
At Galen Druk.
At Ornery. Okay. At Ornery Galen Drew.
And Ornery. To be continued. Life
yeah, real attitude.
Good night.
Bye. That's not the Galen I'm used to talking to privately over a drink. I like drunk loose Galen better than
there's also the fact that, you know, if, as a reporter, if you say anything and someone listens to this whole podcast and throws, you know, the one sentence you say on the air, you gotta be very careful what you gotta say.
But I mean, it's the world that we live in. But also,
that's the problem. That's why I think the
I don't know about, and that's a whole other thing. I think Alex Jones is intentionally saying things that are provocative.
But the mentality of judging people, looking out there and trying to catch people on what they say, and that we should
I don't think Facebook bans people for where do you draw the line? One offense or two offenses?
Look at it another way. In a world where people don't care from the seller, that we believe in free, that they wouldn't care that you run a radio show and somebody said something. They just wouldn't care. It would be like, you know, people say shit, whatever.
Wait, I think there have always been really strong rules about what journalists can express when it comes to opinions.
Right. No, he's worried about being lying.
Well, I'm worried.